You're listening to Monday Morning Live, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League.
All right. Well, I think we can get ready to get started. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I am Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League. This is our very first attempt at Monday Morning Live, the webinar. We are also attempting to stream this live on Facebook at the same time. So during this unprecedented time, the league is learning a lot of new things, just like I'm sure you guys are all learning new things with technology and all the different options that are out there available to us as we're all working from home. So today I'm very happy to be joined by our full legislative staff. I have Chris Hackbarth, our Director of State and Federal Affairs, John Lamacchia, our Assistant Director of State and Federal Affairs, Jen Rigtrink, Legislative Associate, and Harrisana Richards, Legislative Associate. So we're just going to dive right into it. I do ask if you have questions for us. We have Betsy, our Administrative Assistant in our Lansing office, on standby reading our comments, and she will come in and ask any questions that you may have in the group chat box. So we ask that you submit all your questions in that group chat box, and we'll answer them the best that we can. So let's just start off with the group. So a lot of things happened just over the weekend, you know, with the situation. Everything's changing almost by the minute, it seems like. The governor just had a press conference about 10:15 this morning. She announced some new executive orders. As maybe many of you heard, one of our state legislators just passed away, presumably from the virus. So this is a very serious thing, as we all know, and it's really hitting home for a lot of us. So Chris, if you could kind of talk a little bit about the one legislator and also about the governor and some of the things she just came down with.
Sure. So I'll kind of kick things off, and we'll play between the four of us here, just kind of going in and out as each of us wants to chip in. So the legislature obviously is doing the same thing the governor requested, which is they're staying away. They're on recess right now. Theoretically, they were going to be coming back this week on the 1st. They had scheduled two days, the 1st and the 7th, to be in session. There is a certain period of time that the legislature has to act to continue any of the emergency executive orders that the governor has in place, 28 days. So that's the 7th of April. So some legislative action is likely by the 7th, but I think the legislature was looking at coming in on the 1st to deal with any renewals of these executive orders. And based upon what we found out this last week, that Representative Carter, Tyrone Carter, had come down with the virus. And then that last night, Representative Isaac Robinson had passed away from Detroit. That based on that, I know there's a lot of conversations taking place with leadership about how to handle potentially if they do session, what they need to do, when they need to come in, and how they handle that. So that's, you know, what's going on right now with the schedule. You know, certainly we look, the governor today did go through the supplemental budgets that had been sent to her just over about 2 weeks ago. So she was at the point where she had to sign those supplementals. At the time, there'd been a $300 million worth of appropriations, kind of cleanup from the end of last year and some of the budget issues at that point. The governor today came in and line item vetoed a significant number of those budget supplemental pieces that weren't related to fighting this current pandemic or some critical issues. One thing that was retained, members will receive the $14 million that was in supplemental to reimburse local units for the March presidential primary, was retained. So those dollars are still there. But some of the other things that even the governor had been looking for as her priority were lost. I know some things that others on my team were working on as well.
Chris, do we know if, you know, impact on like revenue sharing or anything like that at this point, things that our members are really going to feel, or is it too early to tell what's in there at this point?
I think as we look across the board, certainly property taxes probably are a little bit insulated right now. So because the winter tax bills were already paid before we got to this point. But I think the state is looking at income tax concerns, sales tax concerns, you know, fuel tax concerns, anything that is going to be impacted. We have a May revenue estimating conference that's currently scheduled as part of the normal budget process. We will probably be seeing in the next few weeks estimates of the potential impact on the economy. I think that's one of the reasons why you saw the governor do these line item vetoes today, to preserve as much cash as possible.
Go ahead, Harrison. I think you were going to add something, perhaps.
Well, one of the things that we did notice was that there was a cut to high waters. And I know that $5 million that we had worked to acquire in the appropriation process was something that was very much needed by our communities along the coastline. As many folks know, we have had severe infrastructure problems that are only expected to compound as we move into the summer season as the water continues to rise. So we're definitely going to be continuing conversations as we move forward into the summer and broader conversations about making sure we retain that $40 million and really prioritizing it, that funds are important. So we hope that those funds that were needed for that, if they are reappropriated, that they've gone to things that are also needed at this time.
Okay. So you said that was cut. Is that what I heard you say? Okay. All right. John,
Matt, I'll jump in here too, because I see Scott Smith's question here, just to try and grab some of those while we're going. The president has talked about extending the social distancing measures until April 30th and whether or not the governor would consider those same types of measures here. While we haven't heard anything directly from her or her staff on that, consistency has been pretty direct with both at the federal level and here at the state level. And I think we could probably fully anticipate that those types of things will fall in line with federal guidelines, although they haven't been officially announced yet. But that's, I think, what all of us would be expecting to be announced at some point, whether that be done through executive action on our end or when, as Chris mentioned, the legislature comes back in.
Thanks, John. Make sure you guys talk loud to hear. Sometimes your voices fade out a little bit. We've had a number of people join this call since we started. I'll just recap real quick. I'm Matt Bach with the Michigan Municipal League. We're just doing our regular Monday morning live that we do every other Monday on Facebook, but we're doing it as a webinar today during this crisis. We hope to continue these moving forward. We feel this is a good chance for our members to interact with us, in real time. Thank you for joining us. We have well over 100 people on the call already, which is impressive considering we only advertised it about 2 hours ago. So we're sorry for the short notice, but we will be also streaming this and recording this and putting it out on our social media channels and our webpage and our podcast later. So if you know people that weren't able to make the call right now as it happened, we will be promoting it as a recorded version later. So you can see it then as well. There was a question that came through about the executive order issued over the weekend. Chris and team, if you want to talk a little bit about that, the one about water shutoffs, you could tell us what that executive order is and the potential impact for our members.
Yeah, so I'll take the lead on that, and hopefully I'm speaking loud enough now for everybody to hear. And so that's executive order 2020-28. I got word about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. I got a call from the governor's office saying that this order was going to be issued. We immediately went to work notifying a few of our partners and then waited until the order was issued. She signed the order just after 7 p.m. Saturday night, spent some time yesterday and again this morning talking to Eagle about that. And there are some questions that remain unanswered, and I'll go through those in just a second. But let me walk through the order briefly here so everybody knows what it is. The order will require reconnection of water services to any occupied property that was shut off for non-payment. That order takes immediate effect, and you must implement that to the best of your ability by April 12th of this year. Now, there's also a reporting requirement and an accountability requirement. And the reason that exists is because in conjunction with the order, right, there are some very specific dollars within Eagle, $2 million to be exact, that will help defray some of the cost of this at the local level. So based on that reporting, you need to identify which properties have been disconnected from service due to non-payment, which properties have been disconnected from service for a reason other than that, and then how many total properties in each of those categories you would have, and then submit that to the department as quickly as possible. Now, We've asked a number of questions of Eagle to date, and one of the big questions is, what is an occupied property? And I saw that there was a question in here earlier about a condemned property. And what we are at least looking at, by the way we read the order right now, is that occupied is those that are actually taking legal occupancy of that property. I've asked the department this morning to clarify that for us, but at least the early indication that I got from them is that that might be the direction that this is going in. The other questions that we have gotten is, how does this play with the lead and copper rule, and whether or not you're going to be required, if you're reconnecting service that has a lead service line, to replace that lead service line. That answer they said they would have to us here in short order. The conversation that we had about that specifically was because there is a very, very short timeline associated with implementation of this, that replacement might not be able to be done at the point where you reconnect the service. And so you're gonna have to give some very specific instructions on flushing. On Eagle's website right now, and we can put up the link to this, is the very direct video that they put together about flushing for any reconnection and how you go about doing that on the internal side. Sorry, I'm just looking at some of my other notes here. Oh, and then one of the other things that we talked about with the department this morning is the specifics on the cost reimbursement component. And so the early advice that we're getting from the department is that in each of these cases where you do a reconnect, you should very carefully monitor and write down and categorize what your costs are, and then those will be able to be submitted to the department. What the department does not have right now, and what they are working on as we speak, is how you will submit all of that information. They have a general email address right now that you can submit things to. That email address is, and when I'm done talking here, I'll type it into the chat box so everybody can see it. But that email address is somewhere here in my notes. Sorry, I'll put it up there. I know I have it somewhere. The beauty of doing this live from your home and right away, but I'll make sure I get it in the chat box. And so you can submit any direct questions you have there. But when you submit your cost estimates, I've asked that they have a kind of one-stop shop that each of us can go into, fill out a very direct form that's consistent, so everybody's being asked the same questions, inputting the same information, and therefore we can, you know, adjust and do those distributions of payments accordingly. That being said, I still think there's going to be a number of things that as we go through this and we figure out what some of the issues are in our own communities, whether that may be, you know, have you identified some of the workers as non-essential? Do they now need to be deemed essential? That's a question we pose to the agency as well. And then as we get past the April 12th timeline, you know, there's no penalty in the order for not doing it. It asks that you implement it by then, but if there are reasons and rationale that you can't do it, that you identify that to the department, an extension can be granted, and then you can continue to work on those reconnections as necessary. And the final thing that I'll say here is, when we look at this, you know, what if somebody, much like when we talk about the lead and copper rule, doesn't let you in their home? And I pose that question to Eagle directly today. Is there going to be any sort of requirement where you have to identify that somebody didn't let you in? Do you have to do a certain number of follow-ups? What is the specific example there? And again, watching a few more of these questions come in here as I'm reading to my right, you know, the difference between residential and commercial property. Right now, again, the owner doesn't speak to the difference between the two. It just talks about an occupied property. I asked them very specifically, does that mean occupied by an individual person or just a business in general? So do we get into that commercial versus residential and go from there? So again, like most of her orders, there's some specifics in here, but still a lot of unknowns and questions that we are working to get answers to you immediately on, and we'll post those both on our resource page and on our blog.
John, there was one question you may have touched on. It was about how far do they have to go back as far as timeline? Did you touch on that? There's no clarity on that, I think you said.
Yeah, so right now the order does not address a timeline, nor do I anticipate a timeline being addressed. So it's going to be anybody that has been disconnected due to non-payment and occupancy is still within that physical property. And we can definitely make sure that we work to get some direct clarity on that question. But based on the conversation that I had this morning, there was no indication of how far that timeline went back. The order also does not waive any of the non-payment that's out there now, so that individual customer would still be responsible for paying any of their fees associated, whether that be a late fee, non-payment fee, and any of the fees that would be brought about due to the fact that you would have penalties, interest, you know, those types of things that our community.
Okay, thank you, John. I saw some of the other questions on here does touch on some of the things that we had planned to talk about today, so we'll get to those as we kind of go through our list here. Next thing I wanted to talk about, unless there was anything more on the water shutoff issue, was the May elections. Someone could kind of chime in on that. We've had a lot of questions about, you know, what's happening with the May elections. The governor did issue a new executive order. I think it was an executive order on that. If you could talk a little bit about what that is all about.
Sure, I'll kick it off. And Harrison and I have both been in contact with the Bureau of Elections Secretary of State on this issue. Order 2020-27 was done at the end of last week, dealing specifically with the May election. There had been a prior executive order dealing with extending the canvass from the March presidential primary. So the governor had addressed that issue. Now there's this new executive order where essentially saying that the May election is going on, it, to the extent possible, that election is going to be held by mail. Secretary of State's going to be engaged in that. Harris and I are in some conversations with the department on how they intend to do that. Then there's also the requirement there will be at least one polling place open in every community for walk-ins. But again, everybody still working with the social distancing. And there had been some work, and I think we had some information go out a week or so ago. They're all blending together now, the days are, but about communities that had been requested to, if they had the opportunity to postpone a question and delay it to the August or November election dates to try and use those dates to the extent possible. So, you know, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. I know Harrison and I have been talking with their office on things like, you know, the filing deadline is a big issue. I saw a question pop up, what to do with that April 21st filing deadline for any community that has a primary that they need to deal with this year. You know, other things, you know, getting these absentee ballots out, what are the costs? So, you know, there's still very, very much an evolving situation. There is still going to be an election. There will be some sort of support from the Secretary of State's office for the costs associated with the increase in mail for that. And stay tuned because we're getting more information literally by the moment. Harrison, anything you want to add in your conversations with the department?
Nothing I'm able to add so far. I mean, we have been starting conversations about, you know, the ongoing questions that Chris has mentioned, what that process is going to look like and how to streamline it for the upcoming election. So please continue as you start having conversations with municipal clerks, send us the questions that you're having so we can incorporate those and get you the best answers.
Sana, this is Matt. One of the questions I think was related to this was, what are the local petitions deadline? Is that something you can address?
That's a question I definitely can get an answer to.
Okay. All right. The next issue we wanted to talk about was also a question somebody had, is the city and state income tax deadlines. There have been some orders that came out on that. Who would like to talk a little bit about what that means?
And you froze, Matt. All right, hopefully we're still all live, even though Matt is
in for our members.
There he is. So the governor also,
breaking up. There you go.
You froze. There you go. All right.
Go ahead. Try that. Start over from where you were.
So the governor did sign Executive Order 2020-26, again, also last week, dealing with the filing deadline. As many folks are aware, the IRS extended both the filing and payment deadlines at the federal level to July 15th. So the state, the governor with this order did the same for state income tax and city income tax, moving those either April 15th or April 30th deadlines out to the end of July and the middle of July. Again, corresponding with whatever date you were using in April, you're extended out to that same date in July. So there's a lot of other questions out there on the potential impact of that deadline for the 24 city income tax communities we have. I've been in contact with those communities over the last week and been meeting with Treasury. Had a meeting last week with the state treasurer talking about some of those concerns in terms of cash flow or delays in filing, other ways to mitigate some of those impacts on communities. So that's a very big issue for us continuing as we move forward. But at least with regard to the specific filing, that is officially extended through July.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. One of the things I don't think we touched on earlier, I want to go back to before we get in, we do want to talk a little bit about the federal stimulus package that was approved last week, and that is the legislative schedule. Chris, could you talk, are they going to meet this week? Do they have to meet, or are there some pressing issues they need to address?
Well, I think, as we kind of talked about in the very beginning, the question of how long are these emergency orders the governor has in place, how long are they good for? At what point does the legislature need to come in and authorize their renewal? I think there's some consensus building around the fact that these orders are only good for 28 days, and the legislature does have to come in at a certain point here, either the 1st, which was the day they had scheduled, or the 7th, which would be the last day to do these extensions. So I think that's in leadership, the four quadrant leaders and the governor's office are all working pretty closely together on making sure they have this situation in hand and know which of those days they'll come back to deal with those extensions.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Let's talk a little bit, Jen and Harrison, did you guys have anything to add before we move on to the federal issues? Okay, all right, let's talk about the federal stimulus package that was approved over the last week, on Friday, I believe. I should note before we get into that, we are going to have a webinar on Wednesday from 2 to 3 with U.S. Senator Gary Peters. He's going to talk about the federal response to the stimulus or to the crisis and also the stimulus package itself. So please, again, it's another free webinar that we'll be offering, and that's from 2 to 3 on Wednesday. Go ahead and Chris or John and talk about what you're seeing federally.
So, what passed last week and the president turned around and signed it, the $2.2 trillion CARES Act, stimulus act, was the third actually stimulus proposal that's moved over the course of the recent weeks here. Certainly the largest by far in history in terms of dollar amount going out. I think as we worked with National League of Cities, one of the key points in that was the state stabilization fund that was established, state and local stabilization fund that was established, $150 billion going to states and local units above 500,000 in population. Now, that doesn't mean that only local units above 500,000 in population get those dollars. It just means that anything that doesn't go to those communities would need to flow through the state budget process. This was an issue that I know National League of Cities and we had communications with our congressional delegation trying to get that number lowered, that 500,000 population threshold lowered. Not successful in the bill that passed, but I think in looking at some of the other items in that beyond, Michigan's portion of that $150 billion is just under $4 billion, $3.87 billion. The amount, I think there's some estimates floating around that the amount that cities, specifically local units of government specifically could get would be about 900 million of that 3.87 billion. So we're looking at the state having roughly $3 billion to dole out for costs related to coronavirus. Jen, I know there was some specific funding, additional funding that was thrown into community development block grants in the stimulus bill.
Yes, a lot of that money is being run through CDBG.
So there will be a separate pot of funds for that. I mean, when you look at that $2.2 trillion, it really did spread amongst a number of different federal agencies, There was some federal rail and federal transit funding. Again, it's community development, the block grant funding, EPA had funding. So we've got a host of dollars that local units will have access to. Some of it will go full flow directly to those local units or local authorities, like when we're talking transit. Others, you know, like I said, we'll have to work through the state budget process for those dollars.
I should note, you guys can probably add on to this if you want, but the National League of Cities, our umbrella organization, you know, for all the state leagues, really worked hard behind the scenes on the package. We were getting regular emails and updates from them as they were trying to get everything in place to the benefit of the cities. I think we got some things we wanted and we didn't get some other things we wanted, but you know, they worked really hard on behalf of the members, you know, nationwide. I was impressed with what I kept seeing from them. All right.
And I think we also saw, Matt, the a lot of federal conversations, Speaker Pelosi and you know, the Fed chair talking about the potential that this isn't the end of stimulus either, that there are other federal efforts that are going to be coming. Work may already be beginning on a fourth stimulus bill. The speaker specifically mentioned an interest in state and local costs, that those probably were not addressed to the extent that they need to be. So we will be very active on the federal front as well, and hopefully have an opportunity to talk this week with Senator Peters about some of those efforts.
Thank you. John, were you going to add something?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. I mean, I give a lot of credit to our federal partners right now, NLC, plus you know, our congressional delegation across the board has been very supportive of trying to help us deal with this here in the state. Communication with them has been fantastic, understanding the circumstances that we're all facing, and pleased to continue to work with them. And hopefully we'll continue to see some progress at the federal level that's a direct benefit to Michigan.
Good. And one of the things I saw that was kind of cool is they put out a letter from all the major organizations that represent municipalities. So they had the National Counties Association on there, the ICMA on there, and they all did a united front as far as trying to get some of the things. So that was kind of cool to see that all those organizations coming together and speaking in a common voice. I do see one of the questions, somebody said they came on late and asked if this is going to be recorded, and the answer is yes. We will be reposting the entirety of this discussion on our podcast page and on our YouTube channel, and also it'll be posted on our social media and in our website. So there'll be a lot of different ways for you to see this in its entirety. I'm going to ask Betsy now if there was any questions that we missed. We try to scan through and catch some of them. I do see a question here about revenue sharing. We touched on that earlier, but I'll let Chris or John kind of get back to that. And the question was, will state revenue sharing be impacted for the next fiscal year, and should municipalities adjust budgets as a precautionary measure?
So it's a loaded question. We don't have a final answer really in terms of what the budget's going to look like for the coming year. We certainly know there are going to be revenue impacts. How long those revenue impacts exist, do they extend kind of throughout the whole year? Do we enter an actual economic recession or depressionary period for an extended period of time? What will that do to the state's budget? What extent will federal dollars be able to backfill and support? Again, if this is a quick dip and things get back, you know, it may just be something where we need some of these stimulus dollars to fill in the gap. If it's protracted, there will be impacts, and so we'll need to kind of be paying very close attention to that. And again, that May revenue conference will probably be our first indicator from the state of what they're looking at for the coming year and the rest of this fiscal year.
Good, thank you.
We did get another question. I think it'll be for John. If a home loses water service due to a broken line or pipe on their responsibility side, is there an obligation of the city under this order to help with the repair in order to return the water service?
Yes. So a couple of things I'll mention there. And one thing that I didn't mention when I talked about the original order as I was speaking, but there is a component of this order that obviously it requires connection or reconnection for non-payment, but if for any reason the local unit or the water supplier determines that there could be an adverse public health effect, so such as cross-contamination due to that reconnection, you can make a judgment to not do that. Now, as it would relate to the specific question that you asked, Betsy, and was posed through the chat box, under the order, specifically under number two, if you look at that order, it talks about we have the responsibility as the local unit to determine what the situation is beyond a non-payment issue. And at that point, we have to, and as it says here, make the best efforts to remedy such conditions and restore water service to such occupied residents as soon as possible. So while it doesn't specifically say that we have to do this in terms of a broken pipe or if that's the reason for disconnection, based on my read of this, and we can work with the department to see if there's any additional clarity that we can provide based on what I'm going to say here, is that it would assume here in the priority of how you do your reconnects, those that have been disconnected for non-payment first, and then if there are others that you think you can go in and assist to the best of your ability, we should look at doing that.
Thank you, John. Any other things that we missed, Betsy?
The only other one I'm seeing is a question from Barb. Are March election post-audit still being planned to be held?
March election audits? Anyone know on that one?
I think that as we do more inquiry with the Bureau of Elections, again, there's a lot of other things beyond just holding of the May election that we need answers for. And so that's one of those that, as Harrison and I are talking to the department, we can get that answer.
Okay. There's one question here. I don't know if we can answer it, but I just see it. We're being told by our county OEM, executive manager maybe, that all requests and reporting related to this order should go through them. I have no issue with that, but confirming that is the standard. Do we have any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I can answer that. So that is direction in accordance to Michigan's Emergency Management Act. So with the Michigan State Police, they house all of our emergency services. The OEMs probably are the emergency manager for county. So we have them county specific. So every municipality, if they are in a local state of emergency, they would immediately reach out to their county emergency manager, who would help them facilitate the process of identifying what the issue is, gathering the information that's necessary to record that, and also facilitating communications between that local municipality and the state level. So many of our communities who have had experiences with state emergencies have dealt with that in other capacities. This process is just the same. And so this will be the individual who will work with your community, streamline your communication to the state, and also help facilitate that process to get federal and state funding as it relates to anything with virus.
Thank you.
So I'm seeing a couple of more questions coming in on the water reconnection order that I'll try to address here quickly. Barry, I saw your question. Thanks for joining, Barry. We have made the suggestion to the department about creating a standardized form for submission of information so we can get to reimbursement. Whether or not they do that or not is to be determined. So I'm hopeful that they will, and I think for consistency for both them as it relates to information intake and us as it relates to pushing information out to them, that would be incredibly helpful, and I think they're open to that. And I see there's a similar question to the previous one I answered as to whether or not we would be responsible for working on a reconnection if that water was disconnected at the customer's request. Again, the order is very specific to non-payment as the priority for which reconnection should take place. Should you have a voluntary disconnect, you have an entirely different situation, but I do think that every effort should be made. Hi, Tyler. That every effort should be made. That's Chris Ackbar's son. Always got to have a little levity on Monday Morning Live. Hey, better your kids than mine, Chris, right?
I don't know if the viewers could have seen that. You were on the camera, so they may have not seen
that. Okay, they might not have seen that. So Chris's kid just walked into the frame and waved. But anyways, back to the question. So obviously the priority is for those that have non-payment. And then as the order states, for all other issues that are not related to that, we should make our best efforts to work with those customers to see if we can address that issue. Whether that gets down to something that we should be actively paying for and then seeking reimbursement. We don't have a direct answer on that, but I can absolutely make sure that we ask that very pointed question and see if we can find out what the specifics are around that. And then I see the Office of Emergency Management question was specifically related to shutoffs. And again, not knowing exactly what county was suggesting that, that is not the guidance that I was given directly on the phone today. But that might be something as a way to streamline the information could be entirely possible. So we will work to clarify whether or not that will be a direct submission from each of our individual water suppliers or whether or not that will go through county emergency management. And in some cases, we might need to be careful there because I can absolutely see certain scenarios where water suppliers would cross county lines, depending on who's doing it and where you're doing it. So we'll make sure we get clarity as to whether or not it's each individual water supplier that is submitting their information for reimbursement or if that needs to be shuffled to the county and then to the department in that fashion.
Okay, thank you, John. Looks like we got another question on the May election. I don't think we asked this one yet. I appreciate the May election is important, but the petition deadline is April 21st. Do we know when this will be addressed?
Yeah, again, this is, as we mentioned before, that absolutely understand that it's critical. We do not want people out there circulating petitions right now, and certainly they're not allowed to be. So we have been in direct contact with the governor's office about this. We've been talking to House and Senate leadership about this issue, as well as the Bureau of Elections. And as soon as we can get one of them to give us an answer, we will have that back out to all of you. We recognize that it's very timely right now.
Thank you. I do want to mention we have a couple other webinars this week that I'm going to mention in a second, but all of our webinars we've had in the past, I think this is our eighth one now, kind of all related to the COVID-19 crisis. This is our eighth webinar we've had in 2 weeks, so we're pretty excited to be able to give you guys timely information. They're all available on our website, mml.org, or you can go to mml.org/coronavirus as our resource page. And then with the webinars we have this week, as I mentioned before, we have Senator Gary Peters come doing a webinar from 2 to 3 on Wednesday. On noon on Thursday, we have a good webinar about the U.S. Census related to the COVID-19 crisis and the fact that the census is still on. It's still something that they're pushing hard to get accurate counts. It's very important, as we all know, to all of our communities have accurate counts for the revenue that comes into our communities. So we're going to have some officials from the state census efforts talking about that and maybe kind of how they shifted a little bit in response to what's going on in the world. So those are the kind of the ones we're having, and we're planning some more. One more this week we're looking at, and then a couple more next week as well. If you have topics for webinars you would like to see us talk about, feel free to email those to me at mbach@mml.org or any of the staff, any of the league staff really, and we'll look at those and try to get those topics done as webinars. Any other comments from any of our legislative team before we sign off?
Matt, I just wanted to mention FOIA and that we are still working on additional guidance and clarification on FOIA. We know there's a lot of unanswered questions out there, a lot of varying opinions on what's essential to protect and sustain life. And just that our members know, we are still working on that and we'll get information out as soon as we have it.
I'm glad you brought that up because that is an issue that a lot of our members are asking us about. We are working really hard to try to get the answers. Some things are just not answers to right now, as everything's quickly changing. So, but we are doing our absolute best to try to get the answers to help answer those questions. Any other things anybody else wants to mention?
Hey, Matt. So also many of our communities have been asking questions about DNR grants for many
people. Oh, yes.
The online system, the deadline is April 1st. So DNR wanted to share with our members, one, if you have any questions about your ability to meet that deadline, contact our grants office, and on a case-by-case basis, they'll be working with folks to accommodate that. Secondly, per the governor's executive order for us to stay home, they have allowed for communities who require a public meeting or any sort of public comment to do that digitally in the place of doing it in person. So that public meeting requirement is eliminated from the grant procedures. So communities can rest easy knowing that they have alternative ways to collect information and they can work with the department to still secure their grants.
Okay. I did see one. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, and similarly, we're all working with the various departments that we directly communicate with on a regular basis. I've been in contact with Treasury, talking with them about a lot of the deadlines that are upcoming relative to end of fiscal years, new budgets, reporting that's required 6 months after a fiscal year ends. Treasury is well aware of a number of those issues that communities are facing with new reports or deadlines. And we're working with them to hopefully come up with either some extensions or some relief from some of those deadlines and get through this next, hopefully, 30, 60, 90 day period.
Okay. I do see a question regarding the virtual meetings, executive order, I think that was 2015, on allowing communities to have virtual meetings. If communities have started hosting virtual meetings, what is the retention requirements for those recording of those meetings? I'm assuming it's the same as anything else that they do, but as far as records retention, but do any of you guys know the answer to that?
We'll have to look into that one, see if there's anything specifically different from that executive order.
Okay, thank you, Jen. All right, well, with that, we'll sign off. I appreciate everybody joining, and like I said, this recorded version of this will be on there. So thank you, everybody.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.